Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the wonderful things about this world is how so often what's old is new again. So it is that the first administration of the man we now know as the felon in chief started off with a ban on Muslim immigration into this country. And now a year, just a little less than a year into this second chapter, the felon in chief, in reaction to the assassination of one National Guard's person and the serious injury of another in Washington, D.C. this week, he declared a permanent pause, much like a long interim in immigration from 19 so-called third world countries, many of them populated by people of the Islamic faith. This time he went a little further and, according to reports I've seen, has rewritten the famous poem by Emma Lazarus that accompanied the Statue of Liberty. It goes something like this.
Save your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to mess up our streets. The wretched refuse needs a mighty garbage truck. Send these, the homeless tempest-tossed, to the folks at ICE. I turned off my lamp and closed the golden door. Although I would like a golden door.
Hello, welcome to the show.
I love you, yes indeed. Well, whoa, whoa, baby, I love you, yes indeed. You know that I want you and I need you too. I'll set the world on fire for you. I need you, yes indeed. Baby, don't you know I need you, yes indeed. I'm gonna tell your mama and your papa too. I'm gonna spend my life with you. I love you, yes indeed. Don't you know, baby, I love you, yes indeed. I'm gonna let you know just where you stand, but I wanna be your man. I need you, yes indeed. Don't you know, baby, that I need you, yes indeed. Your mama done told you close night and day, and don't you let that man get away.
And of course, on the other hand, Shaduki don't. Always even-handed here at Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of it. And now, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, to save Demeter. Save, save to save Demeter.
It seems like all the segments on this program are merging before our very eyes and ears. This from the British tech journal, The Register. The United Kingdom is following us, U.S., leaders of the world, in seeking to fast-track new atomic energy development. Why? The need to provide enough energy for AI, plus the increasing electrification of vehicles. A report published this week by the government's Nuclear Regulatory Task Force claims the UK is now the most expensive place in the world to deliver nuclear projects and calls for a, quote, radical reset, quote, unquote, of nuclear regulations. It essentially blames red tape for the decline in Britain's atomic industry over the past several decades. It recommends streamlining regulation to avoid overly bureaucratic, costly processes, claiming this can all be done while improving safety standards. Who knew? John Fingleton, former boss of the Office of Fair Trading, who also sits on the board for UK Research and Innovation, is the leader of the task force. He says in the report, there are fundamental regulatory drivers. I trust them. Oh, of high cost and delay, and cites risk aversion. Who wants that? Prioritization of processes over outcomes, and the lack of incentives to maximize the benefits to society. The document outlines 47 recommendations for the government. They come under five general areas: providing clearer leadership for the nuclear sector, simplifying the regulatory approval process, reducing risk aversion. I'm going to stay away from that. Addressing incentives to delay progress and working with the nuclear sector to speed delivery and boost innovation. Among the recommendations is that a commission for nuclear regulation should be established, becoming a unified decision maker across all other regulators, planners, and approval bodies. The report also talks of reforming environmental and planning regimes to speed approvals. There it goes. Echoing the government's earlier decisions to streamline the planning process to make it easier for data center projects to get built. And not to be outdone, investor enthusiasm embodied in nuclear tech company Oklo here in the United States. This is from the Financial Times. A Silicon Valley startup backed by none other than Sam Altman, who runs OpenAI, has no revenues, no license to operate reactors, and no contracts to supply power. But stock market values it at around $20 billion. That's the Sam Altman touch right there. Development costs for new nuclear remain significant. The costliest country, as we mentioned, is the UK, according to a government review. The UK at present operates 9 reactors across 4 sites, 15% of the country's electricity. All but one are due to retire by 2030. 2 new power stations are under construction, Hinkley Point C in Somerset and Sizewell C in Suffolk. Both Cs. I'd like As, but, you know. While the government has provided funds for the development of a new miniature nuclear reactor designed by Rolls-Royce, it'll look nice. Proponents of those new, more modular units argue their smaller size and modular construction will allow them to be built with none of the cost overruns and delays that have dogged larger reactors. And place your bets right here. Clean, cheap, safe, too safe to meter. Our friend the atom. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you? Nice and toasty.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Earth's ocean, the planet's life support system, is experiencing rapid and widespread transformations that extend far below its surface. A promising international study published in Nature Climate Change, my favorite part of nature, reveals that vast regions of the global ocean are experiencing compound state change, simultaneous warming, saltier or fresher, losing oxygen, and acidifying all at once. Clear indicators of climate change pushing marine environments into uncharted territory. Well, thank God they brought the Marines. Led by researchers from the Institute of Atmospheric Physics in China, the study developed an assessment and monitoring framework and tool to standardize and combine multiple ocean essential variables, pinpoint when and where they're clearly affected by compound state change in a warming climate. With this research framework, the study demonstrates an increase in impacts of these compound state changes, those ones I mentioned earlier, across much of the ocean's upper 1,000 meters, identifying the areas most affected. Quote, between 30 and 40% of the ocean's upper layers have already undergone significant shifts in at least two critical properties compared to 60 years ago, explains the study's lead author. He goes on, in some areas, up to a quarter of the ocean shows simultaneous changes in temperature, salinity, and oxygen. And he calls that a striking and alarming trend. Unquote. Most intense compound changes are occurring in the tropical and subtropical Atlantic, North Pacific, Arabian Sea, and Mediterranean Sea. They left the Gulf of America out. The combined impact of these shifts is particularly concerning. While each variable affects marine life independently, their simultaneous alteration can push ecosystems beyond their adaptive limits. Quote, the ocean is experiencing strongly compound change multidimensionally, says one of the researchers. The ocean, he says, is transforming in multiple dimensions at once, and even the deep ocean, once considered stable, is responding more rapidly than we thought. Stability is overrated, ladies and gentlemen. News of the warm.
Undercover agent for the blues. long silk stocking, she was rocking with an optical illusion. This ain't how I thought it me. She just kept on keeping me in a state of total confusion. She took me for a ride, rattled me down to my shoes. And I found out she was an undercover agent for the blues. She was so bad.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, what I hope will not be a recurring feature on the show, but it's new this week.
Let's kick it!
This program comes to you from New Orleans, as you know, most of the time. And this week, there have been reports circulating in the city of people, working people, not going to work, not hanging around, not going shopping, because the federal government has announced that starting Monday, Border Patrol and ICE will be putting into motion something they call Operation Swamp Sweep. Somebody there comes up with cute names. This is a continuation of what's been going on in Los Angeles, Chicago, Portland, I guess, certainly Memphis and Charlotte. One of these days I'll find a Republican city. I think there's some around. But as I say, people are preparing to hide. This from the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Border Patrol agents reportedly getting ready to deploy in New Orleans, and schools are seeking to prevent families from panicking while also preparing to respond if agencies show up to campus. In New Orleans, home to sizable immigrant communities, schools have sent messages assuring families that students are safe on campus. That's an effort to dissuade nervous parents from keeping their kids at home. At the same time, schools have developed protocols and district officials have provided legal guidelines for interacting with federal agents. Just say yes, sir. Schools have not been targeted in other cities where federal agents have been dispatched to ramp up the deportations of undocumented immigrants. By the way, speaking of that, as I was, the severity of these moves is quite possibly linked to the fact that there is a quota for arrests and deportations under this program. The quota established by none other than your friend and mine, Stephen Miller. A Department of Homeland Security spokesperson said this week federal agents are not conducting enforcement operations at or raiding schools and are not targeting children. Well, if you target their parents, you've really taken care of the kids. Still, the Trump administration issued guidance this year allowing federal agents to make arrests at schools. News reports in other cities have documented immigration enforcement actions, including the arrest of parents, occurring near schools. The DHS, Homeland Security spokesperson, said agents would only arrest someone on campus, quote, to protect public safety, unquote. In the Democratic-leaning cities where armed federal agents have been dispatched this year. Student absences rose. Researchers have found negative impacts on student attendance and test scores during immigration crackdowns. The CEO of a group that operates seven New Orleans charter schools said he got a glimpse in recent days of what could happen if immigration agents converge on the city. Student attendance at his schools dipped before the Thanksgiving break. Well, they were buying turkey. And frightened parents wanted to know whether their children could be targeted while walking or riding the bus to school, he said. In response, he told families in an email, "We will not allow any agents to enter our campuses unlawfully," unquote. That's a big hole to drive through. Well, drive a school bus through, at least. During the school's annual Thanksgiving turkey and ham giveaway this past week, staffers set aside some food to be delivered to families too scared to leave their homes. By the way, it might be useful at this point to recall something from the memory hole 2019, 18 years ago, in the wake of the city's almost destruction, in the wake of the floods of 2005. 100,000 citizens scrambled out of town. Many of them never came back. And some people came in their place. They were people from various Latin American countries. And it was they, in large part, who helped rebuild this city. Federal officials haven't confirmed reports that the Border Patrol agents are headed to New Orleans, but the Louisiana governor, Republican Jeff Landry, said he would welcome the agents. Quote, "I don't understand what the big fuss is about," unquote, him, on Newsmax. Under state and federal law, it's illegal to interfere with lawful immigration enforcements. And the attorney general, also a Republican, said Louisiana will not allow anyone to impede those efforts. But students, says the newspaper, have rights that schools must safeguard. Public schools are legally obligated to educate all students living in the United States, regardless of their immigration status. Also, federal agents need judicial warrants to enter schools and subpoenas or court orders to access student records. The superintendent of education in Louisiana is politically aligned with Trump, says the paper, and he's not publicly commented on the impending immigration sweeps. Operation Swamp Sweep, ladies and gentlemen, with a real New Orleans flavor.
You better hide out.
Thank you. direct from Mar-a-Lago, where I bet you'd like to be right now if you could afford it. This is technology's favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Donald Trump Men's Underwear for that just banged a babe look. The heavily Alzheimer crew at the always failing New York Times has done it again, and not for the first time. This week, the pathetic excuse for journalists so-called reported that my government is interfering in the politics of Honduras, Brazil, Argentina, and Venezuela. I'm no doctor, but these people need a brain transplant. They are stupid people saying stupid things in a very stupid way. Maybe they should all take a cognitive test. It's not easy. I aced mine, but stupid people can't do that. Man, woman, camera, and so much more. Not that much more, but enough. The main complaint of these moronic morons is that I was interfering with the national politics of these countries by endorsing certain candidates for president. Not of this country, of course. That job is taken by someone who aces all his tests. But I did endorse those candidates, and I did pardon the former head of one of those countries. These were all people who showed their love for this country by their willingness to help support the construction of the most important ballroom in this nation's history. Showing gratitude is not a bad thing, no matter what the fat slobs at the New York Times may think. And yes, the former official of Honduras, who I pardon, was involved with the transport and importation of killer drugs into this country. But he personally told me he was sorry. And besides, our Army and Air Force, the best in the world, even if the gerbils at the New York Times don't think so, are bombing the hell out of narco-terrorists in the sea off Venezuela. Any journalist who hasn't got pea soup for brains would see that's the kind of even-handed president Americans voted for in the greatest landslide ever. I hope the next time I talk to you, we can announce that Venezuela is helping to build the ballroom too, and that Maduro can spend his retirement elsewhere taking his own cognitive tests. Thank you for your attention to this matter, because I certainly did. Stay loyal.
Truth Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Footwear. Walk a mile in his shoes. So long.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. Yeah, it's cold. It got cold here. There was a cold front for a couple of days, but No. This, ladies and gentlemen, this is a crypto winner. The Ghana payment project, there's no H in that Ghana, was exploited for more than $3.1 million this week. The attacker laundered the stolen funds across two chains, BNB Smart Chain and Ethereum, in case you wanted to know. Hackers consolidated the stolen crypto at an address where the bulk of the funds were swapped into BNB. I don't know what that is. From there, roughly $1.04 million was deposited into Tornado Cash in an initial attempt to break traceability. You don't want that. Zach XDB stated the remaining assets were then bridged to Ethereum, and the exploiter deposited an additional $1.05 million into Tornado Cash, a further $1.046 million currently sits dormant at an Ethereum address, according to an on-chain sleuth. Ghana Payment is a small payment token project built around the BEP20 Ghana token. The project operates primarily through decentralized exchanges and online liquidity pools. Anybody for the liquidity pool? With limited publicly available technical documentation. I said limited documentation. No formal audits or detailed security materials have been published. Details of the underlying vulnerability remain unavailable. That, according to The Block. Tom?
The Block.
That's right. Data from Gecko Terminal shows Ghana's token fell by more than 90% following the incident. But it's not the only one. The value of Donald Trump's cryptocurrency leaked ventures has fallen sharply in recent months, erasing hundreds of millions of dollars from the family's estimated fortune, underscoring the vulnerability of the digital assets that help drive their recent financial gains. Market data and corporate disclosures reviewed by Bloomberg show that the family's net worth has declined from about $7.7 billion in early September to roughly $6.7 billion. That's a loss of a billion. Send your cards to the White House. This is a shift that coincides with significant decreases in the prices of companies, tokens, and financial holdings tied to Trump and his adult sons. The movements in those assets come during a wider downturn across digital currencies. Bloomberg reports it has erased more than $1 trillion in value from the crypto scene. The Bloomberg figures reflect the performance of entities in which the Trump family holds equity or token positions, as well as publicly available information about recent valuations. A major portion of the decline involves Trump Media and Technology Group, the parent company of Truth Social. Not of the audio. That's a set. Bloomberg reports the company's shares have fallen about 66% in the past year, reaching a record low last week. The president's stake is held in a trust overseen by, you know, an independent party, his son. That stake has dropped by approximately $800 million since September, according to a July statement cited by Bloomberg. The company invested about $2 billion in Bitcoin and related things. Its holdings include about 11,500 Bitcoin purchased at $115,000 each. That's an unrealized loss of about 25% based on current prices. Crump Media also holds a token issued by Crypto.com. They have an arena named after them in L.A. They gotta be good. Bloomberg reports the CRO position, valued at about $147 million at the end of September, has since lost roughly half its value. They haven't lost half the arena yet, though. The two firms are planning to introduce a prediction market platform called Truth Predict. Prediction market is, of course, a euphemism for gambling on everything besides sports. You know, like the elections and the size of certain things that people may see. World Liberty Financial, another entity associated with the family, has experienced declines as well. Bloomberg reports the company's WLFI token, more crypto, dropped from about 26 cents in early September to roughly 15 cents this week. Trump family's holding the token, previously valued at nearly $6 billion, now worth about $3 billion on paper. It's all on paper. Because those tokens cannot currently be traded. So they're not included in the Bloomberg Billionaires Index calculation of the family's wealth. That's got a sting. A spokesperson for World Liberty told Bloomberg the company maintains long-term confidence in the technology underlying digital assets, at least as long as the president of the United States is trying to make this country the crypto capital of the world. Eric Trump owns about 7.5% of another company, American Bitcoin. Donald Trump Jr. holds a smaller stake. Shares of the company peaked at $9.31 in early September. That was Eric Trump, $630 million worth. They've since fallen by more than half, so it's down to $300 million for Eric. You want to buy him dinner? According to Bloomberg, an investor who purchased the stock when it first became publicly available would now be facing losses of around 45%. The family's cryptocurrency holdings as if this is not enough, also include the Trump-branded meme coin announced during inauguration weekend. He wasn't taking advantage of the Bloomberg reports that the token has declined by about 25% since late August, and that a buyer who purchased near its peak would have seen nearly the entire value of that investment erased. In a statement to Bloomberg, Eric Trump said he viewed the recent declines as a, quote, great buying opportunity, unquote. He's enjoying the crypto winter. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you surely have, if you are at all connected to a medium other than the one with the turban and the jewel in it, noticed that more than ever, celebrities are becoming pitch men and women for various products. Credit cards.
How do you cash back?
Being the most frequently aired example. But also there may be, as gambling becomes more and more legal and more intrusive, and, you know, the sports leagues now have official sports books. And then they're surprised when there are gambling scandals that erupt in their midst. But that is a subject for another day. My point simply is that celebrity personalities used to sort of shun commercial work. I think that tide began to change a few years back when the Hollywood trade paper Variety reported that Madonna was, in Variety's words, becoming the latest celebrity booze endorser.
You've been selling some kind of glamour since 1986. Roughed up clothes, a coked up nose, all were in the mix. But now that you've got children, that don't seem so cool. And you got to pull some Jacksons to pay for private school. In the days gone by, you would have got coarser and coarser. Now you're playing it smooth. All grown up, they like the finer things, but a Mercedes deal's not in the cards. Your DUI still clings. You're too cool to push cell phones. Your designs are gone from Saks, but you can't live on ringtones and promoting foreign snacks. There's no need to shout, you're tired of waking up hoarser. You're playing it smooth. You're a celebrity booze endorser. The bottles are so sexy. The white goods look so clean. The whole affair's been walked upstairs. It's a brand new day, a bold new fashion scene. Billboards on the other side of town. Your brand is aspirational. You're an up without a down. Folks with a drinking problem can read the teeny print, but you're late for a photo shoot and they're paying you a mint. If you were a god, you know you couldn't look nor serve. Celebrity booze endorser. Celebrity booze endorser.
How do you cash back?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Comedian John Cleese, of Monty Python and Fawlty Towers fame, told the London Jewish News he was extremely sorry for posting anti-Israel material on social media without checking it. Quote, "I don't understand the internet," he told the paper. "People create things and don't care that they could be disproved." Unquote. In an article that ran this week, the paper reported Cleese now intends to stop commenting on Israel online. The next day, he shared a social media post accusing Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, of dual loyalty for his support of Israel. Another apology in the same vein, New York Police Department Commissioner Jessica Tisch apologized to the congregation of Manhattan's historic Park East Synagogue after a pro-Palestinian protest outside the House of Worship turned into turmoil this past week, according to the Jerusalem Post. Tisch, speaking to the congregation during Saturday services, that's what they have, said the NYPD should have set up a frozen zone outside the entrance after about 75 pro-Palestinian and 75 pro-Israel protesters squared off outside the 68th Street Synagogue. Well, at least they were even numerically. Quote, "People have the right to protest, including within sight and sound of a house of worship. They have the right to say things that are incredibly painful to hear. I understand that pain deeply and personally," said Tisch. "But the right to say those things is protected by the First Amendment, and the NYPD must uphold that right. Our other job that night was to ensure that people could easily enter and leave. That is where we fell short. And for that, I apologize to this congregation." Guy Pearce, the actor, has apologized after posting misinformation and falsehoods on social media while showing his support of Palestine. According to Jewish News, requoted in The Hollywood Reporter, the actor reportedly posted content featuring white nationalist and far-right political activist Nick Fuentes, new pal of Tucker Carlson. Other posts reportedly claimed the top three pornography companies are owned by Jewish people, blamed Israel for the 9/11 terrorist attacks, and accused Israeli officials of orchestrating Charlie Kirk's murder. Pearce also reportedly shared posts from an account dubbed Core Fitness by Naz 2. According to Jewish News, the posts read, quote, "Remember when Zionists tell you Islam will destroy America? While several major Las Vegas casinos that have caused gambling addictions, debt, and prostitutions were created and owned by Jewish Zionists, the Zionists, not Jews, want you to fear the people who stand against the corruption they're creating," unquote. Reached by Jewish News, Pearce offered an apology. Quote, "It has been brought to my attention that in my support of Palestine, I have inadvertently reposted articles and or statements that have contained misinformation and falsehoods. I'm aware how sharing inaccurate content can cause confusion and distress. For this, I am deeply sorry. I will certainly endeavor to be more diligent in future to verify anything I share online," unquote. Pearce also said he would be taking a break from social media following the backlash. This from Great Britain. Early in November, the Constabulary Police Department in Lancashire, that's a shire in England, published a post on TikTok which contained a video of a young man, Muhammad Mubashir Ali Ahmed, inside a police station, together with a video of another man whose face was hidden throwing a firework at a police car. The post alleged that Mr. Ali Ahmed was the man who had thrown the firework and was being punished for his actions, says the Lancashire Police News homepage. "We were happy to clarify that this was untrue and that Mr. Ali Ahmed was not the man in the first video. We're further happy to clarify that the video of Mr. Ali Ahmed, taken from CCTV in the police station, which had been recorded at a time when he was still legally a child, should not have been retained or used for a social media post. We apologize to Mr. Ali Ahmed for this and have agreed to destroy the video recordings as well as the TikTok post. The Lancashire Constabulary TikTok account added to the hurt experienced by Mr. Ali Ahmed in overlaying the TikTok post with a clip of the pop star Rihanna singing, "You Look So Dumb Right Now," and making comments underneath the post. We apologize sincerely for having done this. But there's more. Philip Martin, an award-winning and retired WGBH investigative reporter, that's public radio in Boston, was denied service by a cafe in Cambridge, Massachusetts, after he was mistaken for a different black man who was said to have previously behaved in an antisocial manner at the establishment. The incident occurred at Cafe Nero in Central Square last week when Martin went into the cafe to meet a fellow journalist. He was denied service when he attempted to order a cup of tea. He was told by a worker behind the counter she'd been ordered to deny him service before she attended to another customer. Quote, "I was aghast," said Martin. "I said, I'm completely confused. Are you mistaking me for someone else?" And she said, "No, it's you. We have you on videotape." Unquote. Martin and the worker ultimately called 911. Quote, "It's something I would do instinctively to try to even out the playing field," said Martin. "When someone calls the police, it's best to also have some role in that," unquote. Martin and Cafe Nero's staff ultimately had separate conversations with Cambridge police officers who arrived at the scene. It was later concluded that the disagreement stemmed from a misunderstanding. Martin was ultimately allowed to make his way inside the coffee shop again. He returned to complete his meeting with the fellow journalist, despite his initial experience being, quote, "humiliating. I was intent on not being pushed out of the store based on someone's faulty misidentification," he said. Cafe Nero rendered an apology in the aftermath. A spokesperson said the company was truly sorry for how Mr. Martin was made to feel during his visit. This was a genuine case of mistaken identity due to the close similarity of height, build, and style of beard and glasses with a customer who had been responsible for significant antisocial behavior previously. While it is not acceptable to confuse any customer with another, the prior incident was traumatic for the barista involved, and it triggered her response, unquote, the statement from Cafe Nero. His experience at the cafe was initially reported by the Boston Globe, stating, the Globe did, that the incident involving the other black customer was reported, that the customer was reportedly abusive to the staff and relieved himself inside before he was removed from the establishment. Martin later met with Cafe Nero's corporate team and accepted their apologies. Employees at the coffee shop have also been put on training to address what occurred, said the COO of Cafe Nero. He additionally said employees of the company's other branches will similarly undergo training. Although Martin said he believed the corporate representatives were remorseful about what occurred, he stated he was befuddled when he saw the photo of the other black man he was mistaken for. Quote, "I looked at the photo and I told them, he looks nothing like me," unquote. Martin said the other individual was younger and had lighter skin as well as a scruffy beard. Quote, "This was not a doppelganger in the least," he continued, unquote. By the way, of course, Cafe Nero means black coffee. Now, do sports apologies. Cincinnati Athletic Director John Cunningham, this is University of Cincinnati, I do believe, issued an apology to BYU, Brigham Young University, and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints this week for derogatory chants by fans during the Cincinnati team's game against the BYU Cougars. It's the Bearcats against the Cougars. Come on. Quote, "The use of offensive or religiously derogatory language by a group of fans during the game was unacceptable and does not reflect our values," he said in a post on X. We remain committed to creating an environment at Nippert Stadium. I said Nippert Stadium, where every visiting team and its supporters are treated with dignity and respect. Unquote. BYU is, of course, the flagship school for the Church of Latter-day Saints, widely known as the Mormon Church. Video shared on social media showed fans repeatedly chanting, F the Mormons. The game was played a day after the church community delivered a truckload of 27,000 pounds of food to the University of Cincinnati campus pantry, providing students, staff, and faculty assistance for food insecurity. My food is very secure. It takes some yoga. Cincinnati was the second school this season to apologize for fan behavior during a game against BYU. In September, Colorado coach Deion Sanders issued the apology shortly before the Big 12 conference reprimanded the Buffaloes and issued a $50,000 fine for similar chants. And Jamar Chase apologized this week for spitting on Jalen Ramsey during the fourth quarter of the Cincinnati, there's that town again, Bengals loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers at Acrisure Stadium. Chase was suspended by the NFL for Sunday's game. His statement of apology was addressed to his team, the Bengals and Steelers organizations, and the NFL community. He did not mention the Spitty by name. Ramsey, the Spitty, was ejected for the game after throwing a punch at Chase's helmet. Ramsey said Chase spit on him, which Chase denied. Video of the exchange between the two showed otherwise. Quote, please know I'm speaking from my heart when I say I take full responsibility for my actions during last Sunday's game, Chase said in the statement. What I did was wrong. The circumstances don't matter. My passion for the game is no excuse. There's zero place in our sport or in life for that level of disrespect. He added, this has been a tough season with some incredibly hard losses. But he personally apologized to everyone within the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, saying, I let my emotions in the moment get the better of me. Oh, and one more religiously oriented apology. A bishop's disciplinary tribunal for the Diocese of Southwark in Britain has upheld a complaint against David Tudor related to the serious sexual abuse of a 15-year-old during the time Tudor was a priest in the 1980s. The tribunal hearing took place this week. The judgment will be published in full for regarding a penalty. David Tudor was prohibited from ministry for life in October 2024 after a different disciplinary tribunal upheld complaints from two other women following his full admission of guilt to serious sexual abuse that related to the time he was a priest in the Diocese of Southwark, included serious sexual abuse involving a 15-year-old, and a 16-year-old. He was rector in the Diocese of Chelmsford at the time he was prohibited from ministry last October. Commenting on this latest tribunal decision, the Bishop of Chelmsford said, quote, I want to thank sincerely the woman who brought this complaint and see how grateful I was to be able to meet with her earlier this year. She's shown great courage in coming forward to report David Tudor's abuse. I am profoundly sorry for the harm he caused her. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, it is, as always, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, the side effects of the week.
Don't take if allergic to Cobenfy. Have trouble emptying your bladder or stomach, certain liver problems, or untreated narrow angle glaucoma. Serious side effects such as urinary retention, worsening liver, kidney, bile duct, and gallbladder problems, slow stomach emptying, serious allergic reactions, narrow angle glaucoma, increased heart rate, and side effects in those with kidney problems may occur. Don't drive or use heavy machinery until you know how Cobenfy affects you. Seek help right away if you have hives, swelling of your face, lips, mouth, tongue, or throat, hoarseness, difficulty speaking, breathing, or emptying your bladder.
I'll be sure to let you know first thing. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time on these same radio stations and on your audio device whenever you want it. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Pam Halston and Thomas Walsh here at WWNO for help with today's broadcast. The email address... the show and a whole lot of stuff to watch and listen to and read, as well as the playlist for these programs, the music that is, all at harryshearer.com. I'm on Blue Sky and Substack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy radio network. So long from the home of Operation Swamp Sweep.